Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger, and as always, excited to be with you 7 to 9 a.m. every Wednesday morning on The Morning Voice. Lots of neat stuff happening in Tucson over here. It is, of course, officially the second week of October. And as I've been saying all year long, the second week of October to about the second week of May is our season here in Tucson. It hits right now, like literally this week it is going on. It is Parents' Weekend, so Mom and Dad are coming into town, right?
With a credit card just waiting to be used.
And every restaurant in town, there are over 1,500 fixed food establishments in the city of Tucson and in unincorporated Pima County. And let me tell you, every one of them is looking forward to these couple weeks over here and have been looking forward to it all summer as well. And so we're pretty excited about that. With Parents Weekend, of course, brings a lot of visitors into the city of Tucson. And maybe that explains what's going on in the news a little bit over these last couple days. Looks like we're having quite the cleanup on the Rito, the Loop area over here as well, too, Matt.
Sure.
Massive police action yesterday. I don't know if you got a chance to see what's going on.
Shocking. I mean, it's weird. It's almost like it coincides with something, but I can't quite put my finger on it.
Could it be this upcoming election is what you're referring to on
voting
November
starting
4th.
Today? You mean they're doing a big cleanup the day before voting starts?
This is shocking that you would put a parallel between these two things over here.
This reminds me of the kid that on December 20th, he's been a rotten kid all year, and he cleans up his room, and he takes out the trash, just hoping that he can pull a fast one over on Santa.
Yeah, I think
December 20th.
There are a lot of parallels on this one here, Matt. And obviously, I'm for cleaning up the loop in general,
Amen.
Right? For those that don't know, the loop is over 100 miles of cycling trail that works its way through all of Pima County over here. Its genesis started in the early 1980s after the big floods in 1983 when the county got a lot of federal monies to help prevent the flooding that undercut and eroded a number of buildings. And it's taken three decades to come together. But as a cyclist as well, I'm a huge fan of the loop. I think this is one of the neatest things we have in all of Tucson, that you could ride 100 miles plus and not have to hit an intersection or a traffic light is pretty sweet. But everybody has known for the better portion of the last decade that there are just certain sections you don't ride. That south part of the loop, like adjacent to, say, where the Walmart is in that First and Wetmore area by Tucson Mall and by the Auto Mall, has been rough for the better part of a decade. And it's gotten even rougher to a point where I would personally be afraid. I wouldn't take my wife and small children to ride bikes through that neck of the woods. And of course, it culminated in the murder of a cyclist, Enrique Mercado, just 3 weeks ago, almost to the day, on one of the Tuesday night rides. A group of approximately 100 riders that meet every Tuesday and ride throughout Tucson and use the loop as part of this. And so it'll be really interesting to see if this is just a facade. Did we just push these people to somewhere else? Did they go in the process only to be not processed by County Attorney Laura Conover, who happened to be on this show yesterday?
Indeed.
And I thought that was pretty surprising. I would love to sit down with Laura someday. I know that she was just on the show, but there is an open invitation right there for County Attorney Conover. She'd love to sit down and talk with me a little bit of crime, because I've got a lot of questions. And I don't know that there were that many answers yesterday.
Given your restaurant's proximity to the Huckleberry Loop, I think you might have a few questions about things that you've personally experienced and observed.
Yeah, we've certainly had quite a few experiences and attacks and problems. And again, most of these problems, man, aren't getting reported. And it's even our own fault as business owners for not bringing it up. But eventually, when it's not solved, when it's not treated, at some point it's hardly even worth your time, and you just stick around and deal with the daily grind on your business and clean up the graffiti or deal with the minor theft, because again, we're not going to report that and put these things on your commercial insurance.
Right.
Commercial insurance is one of the most expensive things about running something like a restaurant. I've got over $10,000 a month, almost per restaurant, in insurances between the general liability, the liquor liability, the building programs, the workman's comp. The last thing you want to do is make a $1,000 claim on your insurance. It not only are the deductibles much higher than your home insurance, the rates are much higher too. This is like a DUI on your driving record. And so most people don't want to report these sort of things.
It
not only makes your insurance more expensive, you've got really high deductibles, and it just doesn't seem like these problems are getting solved.
So you make me think. I haven't even finished my cup of coffee yet. And so if let's say you don't report something and you suck it up and pay for it yourself. Well, that means it's not part of what? Crime statistics,
correct.
Right?
Correct.
So, and then they say, oh, the crime statistics are down. Well, are they?
Correct.
Is crime down or is your measurement of crime down?
And it's the measurement of crime because these go dramatically underreported. I can assure you, I've been guilty of this myself. And this is coming from someone that's relatively active in the community and like wants to be part of the solutions and not part of the problem over here. And that ties us into what happened in the last 2 days as well, too, with the bus drivers union getting together to support what seems to be Jay Tolkoff in the Ward 6 City of Tucson election over here. Cleaning up the bus and the free fares and the transit problems we have here in Tucson continues to also be part of this problem that we have with crime. Now, everybody knows that the bus essentially is subsidized even when we're charging fares. We're talking about $70 million that it takes to run the bus in the city of Tucson, right? Even when we were charging fares at its highest point in 2019, we weren't getting more than $12 million or so in fares. And so it's safe to say that the bus has always been subsidized. Even riding the bus paying full fares is in fact subsidized.
Of course.
Like the reducing of the fares is actually subsidizing the subsidy.
Yes.
And so it gets to be a little bit complicated. Tim Steller wrote a piece this week criticizing candidate Tolkoff for not having a solution when given the mic. And he said, well, if I win in 5 weeks, you know, I'll present a solution. But until then, my job is right now to win this election, and I don't have a solution for it. I'm here to bring you a solution to the bus problem right here this morning. And that is a ridership card in some capacity, sure. Some sort of City of Tucson bus ID form. You've got to show ID to walk into my bar. You've got to show ID to buy a train ticket on Amtrak. You've got to show ID to buy a plane ticket. You've got to show ID to buy tobacco. You've got to show ID to buy alcohol. There are so many. You've got to show ID to get into an R-rated movie. Like there are so many things in life that you've got to show identification. If you want to be part of our subsidized program for buses, we could easily put in a database to do these things. We're doing them in the restaurant and bar business right now. You may have read about that in downtown Tucson.
In partnership with the Downtown Tucson Partnership, which is a sort of an adjunct of the city of Tucson, and face it. I mean, it's not directly related, but it's so close.
We already have internet on the buses, right? This is fact.
Right.
So that's sort of a sunk cost. To buy ID scanners and checkers like the ones we use in the bars, the top of the line units are about $3,000 a piece. When you think about what that would cost to then install in each city bus, that would allow you to track who's riding the bus, and then possibly ban, just like we do in the bar business. You go and start a big fight, you get what we call 86. That means you're permanently removed. You are no longer allowed to be a patron of this establishment. And given the massive amount of crime that we've had on the buses and a number of assaults of drivers, a number of assaults on passengers, God, wouldn't it be nice to just have a little list over here and 86 those passengers that are probably the 1% that are truly causing the problem for the other 99%. Now, you might ask, well, what would that do to people that didn't have IDs, the unbanked, the unhoused, the immigration that could be considered illegal? Well, quite frankly, if you're not going to participate in our civic system and have a tax ID number and ID, maybe you can't ride the subsidized bus. Maybe you've got to pay the fare in some capacity. And that might be your cost to society for choosing, for whatever reason, to not participate. But this solution would cost in the low hundreds of thousands of dollars to implement. We're not talking about tens of millions of dollars over here. We're talking a small percentage of the bus budget, and it would fix the problem. So to Mr. Steller, to candidate Tolkoff, to all of our city council over here, let's look into an ID system over here. We could find ways to reduce barriers to entry to getting that ID in the same way they've got DES operating outside of Gospel Rescue Mission, particularly to solve these type of problems. This could be done with a City of Tucson transit ID in some capacity, and it would make a substantial difference in our community.
And if I can just add one more thing, the pundit in the newspaper thinks he doesn't have the answer. But you know who thinks he does have the answer? The SunTran bus drivers who are facing this problem every stinking day. Every day they're dealing with this. And they think Jake Tolkoff has a better answer than the other option. So I don't know, a pundit in the newspaper who opines or the bus drivers who deal with this problem every day?
Well, a Republican candidate has not won in the city of Tucson since 2009, but the last time it did happen, it was in Ward 6. And Mr. Tolkoff happens to be running in Ward 6, and so we're going to watch that one with bated breath in our mail-in only election where ballots go out today. But speaking of neat things happening in our community, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to bring on Mr. Rayshon Kaiser, the new head coach of the Tucson Sugar Skulls. You know I love to support local sports here on 10:30 a.m. The Voice. Don't go anywhere. Listen to Grant Kruger. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. 5 days a week from 7 to 9 a.m. You've got different hosts. On Monday, you've got Lydia Aranda. On Tuesdays, Ted Maxwell from the Southern Arizona Leadership Council bring his engagement hour. On Wednesdays, you get me, Grant Kruger, talking local news, politics, sports, restaurants, and all kinds of neat things happening here in the Old Pueblo. On Thursdays, Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance. And on Fridays, Dr. Ed Ackerley bringing you wonders from the University of Arizona. But right now, we are lucky enough to be joined live in the KVOI studios by a pretty important guy here in town, the new head coach of the Tucson Sugar Skulls, Mr. Rayshon Kaiser. Good morning.
Good morning, Grant. Appreciate you having me. I'm excited to talk about the Sugar Skulls.
Hey, we're excited to have you here in studio. I'm a huge fan of local sports, a huge fan of what's going on down in the TCC over here. And it's really exciting that you just got announced in just the last few days as the new head coach of the Tucson Sugar Skulls.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited for the opportunity. I've been a defensive coordinator here the last two seasons. So we just looking forward to building on what we've been building the last two seasons and making a run for the championship.
I love it. Coach Kaiser, why don't we start with a little bit about your background? I know you're a Midwest boy like myself. I was born and raised in Michigan. You were from Ohio.
Yes.
We could start fighting right across the table right over here, but we're going to choose to break bread and have some coffee instead and talk a little bit about sports over here. You were quite the star in high school as well, too, no?
Yeah, I went to a school called Euclid High School. That's in Euclid, Ohio. Played 4 years there and 2 years varsity. And then I went over to Walsh University as my college. Did 4 years there. Had a pretty good season, so my 4 years there.
And Walsh is in Canton, Ohio as well, too, right?
Canton, Ohio. We played at the Football Hall of Fame at our home games back in the day. Now that Walsh, they built a new stadium on campus now, but back in the day we used to play at the Football Hall of Fame.
Very cool. And you even got a little bit of playing time on, you got picked up by the Jets, right, as an undrafted free agent in 2007?
Yeah, absolutely. I had a great pro day workout, and the Jets reached out to my agent, and I took advantage of the opportunity, and it was a great experience. Wish I would have made the team, but, you know, things happen and, you know, I had other adventures to pursue after that.
Without a doubt. But you did have quite the professional playing career. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. After the Jets, I got picked up by the Montreal Alouettes in the CFL, played about a year and a half over there. When I got released from the Jets, Montreal picked me up right away, finished a year there on the practice squad. And 2008, I was signed back with Montreal, played probably half of the season, and they ended up releasing me as well. And then from there, I got into the arena football world.
Okay. And arena football is different than IFL right now. There's been a few changes in these leagues over here. Let's break down, like, what is the IFL right now? That is where the Tucson Sugar Skulls play.
Well, the IFL is the top indoor professional league out there. It's a lot of indoor leagues, but the IFL is the top dog. And, you know, we are a proud member of that. Tucson been a part of the IFL for seven seasons now. And like I said, we're just a proud member. We happy to be a part of the IFL. It's a 14-team league. Tryon, he do a good job running the league as our commissioner. So we just looking forward to building on what we're trying to do here in the IFL. We're looking forward to it.
So let's talk about some of those differences on indoor football for our listeners that don't know the difference between, say, IFL and college or pro football. Without getting into the deep nerdery of the rules, let's talk about field size, dimensions. Like, how's the game different?
So indoor is 50 yards long, 28 yards wide. So it's smaller fields. Everything's inside. We got walls. You don't have no out of bounds. So a lot of players can catch balls, and you can catch players in the fence. They can jump right into your lap. Just a fun, exciting game. Everything's happens twice as fast in this indoor game. I love it. Me personally, I love it. I love for the new rookies to come in and learn this game. I love to teach this game to them. And like I say, it's just a fun, exciting game.
I love it as well, too. And I think it's great that your season with the Tucson Sugar Schools lines up like outside of traditional NFL and college season. It even misses, for those that are big Arizona Wildcat fans, it even misses the Arizona basketball season, right? Because we don't start until March.
No, absolutely. I think it's perfect. We can't compete with the NFL, and the IFL knows that. So we want to go the opposite season of them. So our season is typically from March to August, and that's when the NFL starts, August to pretty much February. So, and then it's good for the guys, too. If they have a great season, they can, you know, move up and get picked up by an NFL team. So it's we do a good job pretty much promoting that to the guys. And like I say, a lot of people do get opportunities to move up, and we are an opportunity league with these guys. And like I say, we just give them the opportunity to keep pursuing their dream and hope they get picked up to the next level. That's the goal.
Have there been players from the Tucson Sugar Schools that have made it to the higher professional leagues, either CFL or NFL?
Yeah, I'm sure over the last couple of seasons, it's been players that got picked up more so from the CFL and UFL. It's stepping stones to this. So you pretty much get picked up by the CFL and UFL first, then you go to the NFL. So it's a process, but it's a good opportunity for the guys to continue to, you know, play football.
It was neat last year at the IFL Championship, actually just a short time ago, we had Jaden Delora come back into town. He was, of course, a starter for the University of Arizona as our quarterback for a couple seasons there under Jed Fish. It was sort of one of his big recruits, and he ended up coming to play for the winning IFL team that won the championship here in Tucson. So that had to feel pretty good for him to win a title, huh?
Yeah, it did. I'm disappointed because we had a shot to get Jason Delora, and just disappointed that we dropped the ball with that one. He's a great quarterback. I played against him twice, so he's a great quarterback, does a lot of good things. He won the championship his rookie season, so that speaks volumes. So Vegas signed him back for next season. We're looking forward to competing against him again, and like I say, he's a great quarterback.
Hey, who would you think are the biggest rivals for the Sugar Skulls? Like, when you think of the league and the IFL, like, who's the team that gets your blood boiling? Who's the Arizona versus Arizona State, Michigan versus Ohio State? Yeah. Like, who's that for the IFL here?
Well, you know, it's the Arizona Rattlers, and that's our pretty much down the street brothers. So that's pretty much our rivalries, and Northern Arizona too. I think us in Northern Arizona always have competitive games, and like I say, the Rattlers for sure. So I think it's like an Arizona rivalry between us three.
So that's the Phoenix-Tucson rivalry right there. In the same way we've got Arizona State to Arizona, it's the Rattlers.
Yep, absolutely. And like I said, we was the king of the Arizona last season. We beat the Rattlers twice, and we beat Northern Arizona twice. So we're looking forward to hopefully sweeping them this season. That's the goal. So it's always good games. Every time we go down to Prescott Valley or Glendale, Arizona, or they come up to us in Tucson. So always great games, great coaches over there, and Kevin Guy and Ron James. And so like I said, we're just looking forward to competing this season.
And Kevin's got an ownership interest in both teams, right? The Tucson Sugar Skulls and the Arizona Rattlers.
Yeah, he got a small portion of the Tucson Sugar Skulls.
That's a house divided right over there then, huh? He's got the rival of both. It would be like being the president of Arizona and Arizona State.
Yeah, it definitely is. I know him and his wife, they always, he said they always got into it when it was time to play us throughout the week. So it was like a competitive edge in the household.
But this is not a new gig for you, because you've spent the last two seasons as the defensive coordinator for the Skulls, so you're getting the opportunity to move up into the top dog spot. What are you going to do differently?
Just have more structure. I feel like we was lacking a little structure last season. Be more disciplined. In-game decisions got to be better. So I'm going to bring all that to the game. Offense got to score consistently. I feel like we was inconsistent the last 2 years scoring points. The IFL is an offensive game, so if you don't score points, we can't win games. So we got to be able to score points, put the ball in the end zone. Defense, we got to get stops, creating turnovers, however that's possible. And the end of the game, we just got to put up more points than them. And we got to win the turnover battle. So we're going to be a very disciplined team, very structured team. It's going to be fun to watch us for sure this season.
When does your training process start then?
We had a guys report in mid-March. That's training camp typically. So training camp is about a week and a half. And from there, we got a 16-game season, 8 games at home and 8 games away.
That's a pretty long season over there, 16 games. I mean, that's like NFL length. I know they just moved to 17, but that's a complete season right there. A lot of guys get banged up, huh?
Oh, absolutely. And it's good that we have to have the proper care for the guys off the field, like the massages, chiropractors, you know, stuff like that to keep their bodies fresh. If we beat their bodies up throughout the season and they playing football games week in and week out, eventually their body's going to break down. So we got to do a good job as an organization to make sure they stay fresh for game days.
Sure. I would imagine that the Indoor Football League is even more physical than the NFL in the capacity that with a smaller field, you would just have more collisions, more contact, you know, a little more rubbing shoulders.
No, absolutely. And let's break that down real quick, because the IFL, we got a 21-man roster, and we got 8 starters on offense, 8 starters on defense, so that's 16. Normally got a kicker, I'm 17, backup quarterback 18. So, and then you got 3 pretty much reserve players, and one of them got to be an offense or defense lineman, one of them got to be a skilled player, and then the other one probably your best special teams player. So it's not a lot of room for error. If somebody's get hurt, that's a big hit.
Understood.
If somebody get thrown out the game, that's now we down to 20 guys. You know, it's we don't want to put a quarterback on special teams or on defense. You know, so it's one of the things that all 21 men is very important in our game.
Without a doubt. Well, let's take a quick break over here. You're going to have more coming up after the break from Rayshon Kaiser, head coach of the Tucson Sugar Skulls. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant and Rayshon on 10:30 a.m. The Voice. You're home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger, and we're having a fascinating little talk over here with the head coach of the Tucson Sugar Skulls, Mr. Rayshon Kaiser, live in studio. Welcome back.
Good to be back again.
Hey, so we were talking at the break over here about ways that we could improve the exposure of the Sugar Skulls, right? Tucson loves their local sports teams. There are so few things here that are not Phoenix-based. That's why we always have this love for the U of A, right? Because it's our own thing here in T-Town. It's not the Phoenix Cardinals or the Phoenix Suns. Not taking anything away from those teams, right? But obviously we have to share them with the 602. But the Tucson Sugar Skulls are 5-2-0. Like, this is us over here. And sometimes I feel like there hasn't been enough support for teams like the Sugar Skulls, teams like the Roadrunners. What do you think we can do to get more exposure and support for the Skulls?
I just think we got to be out in the community more. My last 2 seasons here, we wasn't in the community enough as coaches and players, and we just got to do a good job, you know, networking and building our brand and doing little things like kids camp. That could be something small, like doing a kids camp, kids football camp. All kids love football, and they want to learn from professional football players, and I feel like we got good guys on our team that can teach these guys the pretty much the basics of the game and from a player standpoint. So I think that's good ways to kind of grow the brand a little bit and put more butts in the seats.
Without a doubt. Anytime you bring in the kids, right, mom and dad obviously have to come as well too. And then money gets spent on food and beverage. Money gets spent on jerseys and on swag. Mm-hmm. Like, and these are all like trickle-down effects that end up contributing to the success of the team. I've always worried that maybe not enough people are even exposed to these brands that are playing at the TCC over here. Let's talk about that arena and the stadium, the Boneyard over here. Tell me about playing at the TCC.
I love it. We got some very passionate fans. I love our fan base. We appreciate everybody that show up and show support. I know the last couple seasons was a couple rough seasons for us, and the fans still showed up in support, and it get pretty loud in there. I feel like we can make improvements to get more, like I say, fans in the seats and better in-game entertainment. I feel like that can be better as well, because I feel like you got to have fun when you're at the games. Have to. So we just got to do a better job with that. And I feel like once people come to a game, they come back because they see how much fun they have. It's not more so about football. It's just we in the entertainment business. So
absolutely, right? And ways that we can create entertainment, whether it be a band at halftime or yeah. I mean, I sometimes think even, say, the Wildcats' lack of filling the stadium comes from how successful the tailgate is. They have such a successful tailgate that a lot of people have had so many adult beverages that maybe they don't make it all the way to the game, right? It can be a real commitment, an 8 or 9 hour, you know, between the tailgate and the game. That's deep. Is there a tailgate for the Sugar Skulls yet?
It is a tailgate, and we had one of our partners last season. I forgot the name of the place. The restaurant was right across from the stadium. They did something small like tailgates, but we got to do better with that. I think some of our, you know, season ticket holders, they was out there, you know, tailgating, but we got to do a better job with that. We just got to do a better job all around, and we will as an organization. You know, we're excited about that for sure.
Hey, you've got a good radio voice, a good presence. Maybe we should do a coach's show, like a radio show over here. We should talk to Patty Ruiz at 10:30, or maybe there's a deal with another radio station. I got to be careful on allegiances in line. But what do you think about doing a coach's show, maybe at a local restaurant?
No, I love that. I think coach's shows, getting the insights from a coach's standpoint and bringing like a player on every week so y'all can get to know these players on personal levels outside of football, I think that's good. to kind of get them that exposure as well, and then get the insights from me as a head coach, how I think throughout the game and the decisions we made, and how do we win that game or how do we lose that game, just breaking it down, like I say, from a coach's standpoint.
I love it. I love the idea of bringing players in as well, too, and getting to meet them. It's always a little more difficult in football because it's hard to recognize the street players of exactly who they are because you don't get to see their face as much without the jersey and the number on it. Where basketball, by its nature, has less members of the team, and of course, they're just wearing less protective gear, so they're a little more visible and obvious, although you can also kind of tell when they're giant and huge and incredibly muscular, like, hey, this guy's a professional athlete over here.
No, absolutely. Football players stand out. Football players stand out. We normally big, muscular. We just look like athletes, dress like athletes, walk like athletes. So we pretty much stand out when we out in the community. But I would like to make sure we are in the community more. And like I say, just getting to know the players' personalities. These are some good group of guys I'm bringing in and just learning their background and their football goals and their football dreams to get to the next level. I love to get them that exposure to the community.
And, of course, winning, right? There's nothing like hanging W's out there to attract fans. We're our fair-weather fans here in Tucson, whether you like it or not. You see it on the football field. We see it with attractions to other U of A teams, you know, looking at you, women's basketball, for example. Like, what can we do to win? You have won. You ran, I believe, an undefeated season as the head coach of Omaha.
Yeah, absolutely. We went 13-0. We won the championship that season. I'm a winner. I'm a winner. I won as a player. I won every time as a head coach. So I'm a winner. I'm going to put in the time and the energy, the effort to get it done. And I'm going to bring in the right group of guys to get it done on the field as well. So we're going to win here in Tucson. I can promise you that. And we're going to be competing in the championship too as well.
I love it. So do you have a place over here in Tucson yet? We got to get you a place now next, right?
Yeah, I'm working on that. Probably within the next week I have a place.
Very cool. Where do you think you're gonna live here in Tucson?
I don't
approximately know. Not your exact address on the radio.
I'm not
doxing you over here.
I don't know that yet. We gonna just look around and see what area I like the best. But I think everywhere in Tucson is nice. I've been around pretty much the whole city, so I like everywhere in Tucson, honestly.
We like to think of it as a substantial improvement from Ohio, you know, no big deal over here, not knocking Ohio that bad.
No, I like Tucson. It's a different change of scenery. You know, you got hiking over here, sun every day. You guys got a lot of good scenery over here. Ohio's a lot of green, you know, four different seasons over there. So I love the sun. So I love Tucson. I love Arizona.
So do you see this team as playing in the TCC in the long term, or do you think there's other stadium options for this one? Like, as we look at the Mosaic Quarter being created, does that have a place for indoor football, or is the TCC our home forever?
As long as the fields fit, the nets fit, and it's a good size for the arena, absolutely, we can look into that. I love the TCC. I think it's a great arena. I think it's a great setup. I think it does a lot of great things to it. But when a new arena get built, we'll definitely look into it and see if that's a good option for us.
Yeah, there's some concerns that the hockey team may not be around in a couple of years because the owner of that team, Alex Marullo, happens to be constructing a 10,000-person stadium in Reno, Nevada, where they've also announced that they're going to do concerts and minor league hockey. And while I'm no soothsayer over here, it's safe to say that he probably is going to have substantial interest in bringing his minor league AHL hockey team with him to Reno, Nevada. And that team may be restructuring. That might leave the Skulls as one of the only games in town, literally and proverbially.
I like that. I like it a lot. Like I say, it could just help grow our brand, and then we can be able to practice inside the arena more. I'm pushing for that for the players. I feel like we need to get inside the arena and practice more with the guys. I feel like it transitioned better on game days when they do that.
I didn't even think about that, Rishon. Like, so ultimately, you can't even practice inside of your own arena often because it being a multi-purpose venue, it's got – whether it be hockey or concerts or other events there sometimes. So that field isn't set up all the time, huh?
No, it's not. Like I say, a lot of different venues goes on in there. And it's unfortunate, but at the same time, when we can get in there, we try to take advantage of it. We got a great partner with Keno Sports Complex, great setup over there. We love that facility. But like I say, it's nothing like being inside the arena and practicing.
Of course, the lighting, you know, just the sound, the feel, even the turf probably all has a different, you know, feel and impact to it. So I would say that that would make a substantial difference. We need to get the skulls in the arena a little more often there.
That's the goal. We practice outside on grass, so they wear cleats outside. And then when you go inside, you wear, like, turf shoes. Then they got the walls, too. So the players and receivers got to get used to kind of running, you know, trying to catch the ball, bracing themselves before they go over the wall. So just a lot of little things. A lot of advantages it has going inside the arena.
Yeah, without a doubt. I hadn't even considered that. That's a really fascinating point. I wonder if it would be more beneficial to practice on outdoor turf as opposed to on grass in some capacity, just so that the moves were similar.
The players say the turf is bad for the knees because it's a lot of stumping on it. I know they prefer practicing on grass, but every player is different. I didn't never had no problem with it as a player, so I think every player different.
I assume they had turf up in Montreal, no?
We practice on grass, actually, outside, I want to say.
The frozen tundra of Montreal? Wow.
Yeah, we practice on grass, I want to say. All locker room. Then we had a dome, but we only went in there when it was bad weather outside. But other than that, we was outside on the grass.
Love it. Well, why don't we take a quick break over here, hear from some local sponsors. We're going to have one more segment with the Tucson Sugar Skulls head coach, Mr. Rayshon Kizer, coming up. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. We've got one more segment with the Tucson Sugar Skulls head coach, Mr. Rayshon Kizer. Welcome back.
I'm good to be back again. Let's finish up.
That sounds great. We're in the fourth quarter of the show over here, but lots of exciting things happening for the Skulls. You're the new head coach. Of course, you were formerly the defensive coordinator the last 2 years, and we're excited to have you here in Tucson full-time and really make this team happen. Give me a breakdown of what do we got to look forward to this season?
Just an exciting, passionate group of young men I'm bringing in that's going to bring some good football on the field. One thing we want to harp on is getting our season ticket holders out there. So visit our website, TucsonSugarSkulls.com. That's the best way to purchase season tickets. We got to fill up the arena as much as possible. We will be on in the community more this season. And like I say, y'all can get to know these players, get to know me a little more. And like I said, we're just looking forward to a great season.
Same. Season tickets is a great way to support all of these local Tucson sports teams over here. If you want to see the Sugar Skulls, you want to see the Roadrunners stick around, support the Tucson baseball team, we have to go out and get these tickets, right? Whether it be a sponsorship of the team, whether it be buy individual seats, whether it buy a field suite or season tickets, we've got to get out there and participate in this one to help keep these local Tucson attractions alive so that we don't just have to go to Phoenix all the time to get our dose of professional sports. And I think it's a lot more fun to root for a Tucson-based team. I don't know about you.
I love Tucson, so I'm always root for Tucson. But yeah, you harped on it. We have to support the local teams, the small businesses, if we want to keep these teams around. I feel like there's no football team in Tucson, and we got one now with the Sugar Skulls, professional football at that. So like I said, we're looking forward to it. Looking forward to a great 2026 season. We're trying to get more butts in our seats for sure. Anything we can do as far as a coaches or a player standpoint, we 100% in on building this team the right way and doing what we got to do.
I love it. There's even a swag out there. If you go to TucsonSugarSkulls.com, they've got a team shop out there that you can buy some pretty cool Tucson Sugar Skulls swag and support as well.
Yeah, absolutely. If you log onto our website, TucsonSugarSkulls.com, you can go to our team shop. Some great, great apparel in there. Purchase it. You know, it's good to wear around the city. You'll always see me in some Tucson gear around the city. So anytime y'all see me out, say hi. You know, I always be in some type of Tucson gear.
It's a pretty cool brand name, to be honest with you, as well, too. Last week, we had the ownership of the Tucson baseball team on, and they were talking about naming and how difficult it was with trademarks out there to actually find a name. You just can't call your team the Eagles or something. They said almost everything has to be a two-part name. You have to be the fighting something or an adjective in front of this. And the Sugar Skulls is unique, and I think plays on the Hispanic culture and heritage that we have here too, and the Old Pueblo. I think it's a pretty awesome name.
I love the Sugar Skulls name. A lot of people back home always say, Sugar Skulls, what is that? But I love the name. It's very unique. I feel like it stands out. And like I say, it fits what Tucson is, I feel like, as a community out here with the Sugar Skulls. I feel like you said, the heritage is out here. So I love the signal. I love our logo. And like I say, we're just trying to get it out in the community a little more.
Yeah, but we've got to just work together to get out the name, to get out the purchase of the tickets, to get out there and support your local teams and fill up that Boneyard this season as well, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, that's going to come on us as coaches and players to be out in the community more so we can, like I say, sell our brand, get the Sugar Skulls name out there, make sure we wear our gear in the community. And like I say, just really promoting this brand so we can be successful.
Yeah, that connection to youth football, I think, would be great for you guys to really get the players out there, get some kids out on the field, get some kids to meet the team, because these are people they could look up to as well, too. Like, I mean, we're talking professional athletes over here at the highest level of indoor football, and it's in our backyard right downtown in the city of Tucson at the TCC. What more could you ask for?
Can't ask for nothing more. And like you said, you harped on these little kids. They see these players as professional athletes. They don't know if it's NFL or, you know, IFL. They're professional athletes in AI, so they look up to them. And like I say, I want these guys to be good mentors to those young kids, because they hope to be in their shoes, you know, one day. And I know when I was a player, a lot of kids looked up to me as well. So I just know, like I say, it's a we hold a lot of impact on these young kids in our generation. So we just got to do a good job leading by example.
Without a doubt. And part of the connection to the youth is through social media, right? Although we're talking about it here on AM radio, like, tell me about, you've got a social media presence with the team as well too, right?
Yeah, so Tucson Sugar Skulls, whether it's Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, you can look us up on there. You can always follow us. We always do the latest updates on all of them. Me personally, I'm on there as well. Coach.
Yeah, can we follow you too? You got a handle?
Absolutely. Coach underscore Kizer, K-I-Z-E-R, on Instagram. You can just search my name, Rayshon Kizer, on Facebook. You know, that's the best way to reach me. If you can't get in touch with the Sugar Skulls, you can get in touch with me. I got all my notifications on, so I get everything. So I'll see it all.
I love it. Well, we're really excited to have you be part of the team here and a real permanent fixture here in the Old Pueblo as we look forward to the Skulls season coming up. It's, again, that season runs from?
March to August. So coaches will be down here probably first week of March. Players will come like mid-March. And then we'll go all the way to August 23rd. Last season was August 23rd with the championship game. So it just depends on the championship game.
And talking about that championship game, yes, real quick, Tucson. We've only got a couple minutes here, but there's the Tucson Convention Center signed a 3-year deal, yes, to do the IFL championships. Last year was the first. So I believe we've got 2 more years of the championship game here, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. That was a great, great deal that Tucson did. I think it's going to help, like I say, the community. We had a great turnout for the championship game. I was there. I loved it. We got 2 more seasons here, and we have to be in that championship game to host one of these seasons, so if not both. So we're going to make sure we get there. I'm going to do everything in our power to make sure we can host one of them games over these next 2 seasons.
Yeah, that was the only thing missing from that championship game experience was our Tucson team over
Absolutely.
Here, Coach. So we got to make that one happen for the upcoming season. Have you guys be part of that. Pack that stadium. Pack the Boneyard. Nothing attracts a crowd like a crowd, right? And so, you know, when you put that winning product out there on the field this season, I know everyone's going to be out there and support you.
Absolutely. Like I said, we appreciate everybody that comes out to the Boneyard and show their support. So appreciate our season ticket holders as well. They don't have to do it, but we appreciate everything they do. And like I said, we're looking forward to a great 2026 season.
Well, we appreciate you, Coach Kizer, for coming to spend part of your Wednesday morning with us here on The Morning Voice. We're excited to have you be part of the team. And get out there and support. Go to TucsonSugarSkulls.com. Thank you, Coach Kizer. We appreciate you.
Appreciate you too, Grant. And we're looking forward to doing more of these shows.
Thank you as well. Don't go anywhere. We've got another exciting hour of The Morning Voice coming up after the break. Welcome back to Hour 2 of The Morning Voice. We've got an exciting hour coming up for you. After the next break, we're going to have Miss Lacey Nagao on. She's the Get Out the Vote Director for Turning Point Action, a little group that's been in the news just a bit this month over here in the state of Arizona. Lacey lives in Tucson, and she's going to join us live in studio. And Matt, it is just going to be a hopping week this week in Tucson. Not only is it Parents Weekend out there, everybody in the restaurant business is scrambling to get open. All those things that were under construction this summer are like just about there or there right now. I was driving up First Avenue just the other day, and I saw that Kintaki, which was the former El Baraco seafood restaurant, the submarine one, looks to be open or about open, as the white trucks were just finishing up over there. So I looked at their social media pages, and they said they were opening on October 4th. It didn't quite look there, but I mean, I'm thinking they are days away from opening right now in a new sushi place over on First Avenue.
That's not a southern state. It's... It's not Kentucky. It's Kentucky.
Yes, Kentucky. Nice. K-I-N-T-O-K-I. I don't know if pun intended there or not.
No, but
it's a sushi restaurant.
Can't wait.
And they're opening up in Midtown. So I love everybody taking that gamble to open up in Midtown. And that was a cool restaurant. Like, that design for El Baraco was pretty neat.
Yeah.
And if you remember, their owner had bemoaned about both the homeless problems and the food truck problems as well, too, that continue to haunt Mexican restaurants in the city of Tucson, as they're just able to offer a product without parking requirements, fire requirements, food safety requirements, right? There was just a post by the city of Tucson the other day where they were getting rid of any requirements to give out food to the homeless or unsheltered, right? And there was a permit that you needed to do that. And so now they've just gotten rid of that permit for these social good, at least in their opinion, socially good places to give this food out. And it struck me as something odd that why don't you get rid of then the permits for all the other food events, like any charity food event that we do? Because every time we do an event, some sort of special event license, not only do you have to pay a fee to Pima County, but it also triggers an inspection. And the inspectors show up with the clipboard and they yell at you about the temporary hand wash station or around temping things and make quite a big deal about this. Like, it's not easy to comply. And so if you're going to get rid of these requirements for a group that's, you know, an NGO that's giving away food product, why not get rid of these requirements for these huge charity fundraisers as well, too, which also have a social good component and might even have a more financially beneficial social good component than giving directly to the unsheltered. It kind of strikes me as a misnomer over here to dump it on one and not do
this
it for
them. This gets back to a theme you brought up before, where people are allowed to use drugs, you know, use dangerous drugs in the open air, and there's kind of this look the other way, and yet if somebody walks out of your restaurant property with a cocktail, you're in a lot of trouble. And it's like, well, wait a minute, if we're going to enforce laws, we got to enforce laws.
Agreed.
I think that's fair.
Without a doubt. But getting back to the good news over here, because I want to bring some good on the Morning Voice, there are new places opening up. Just this week, Desert Drifter Coffee opened up 419 West Speedway. And so that's a locally owned coffee shop. Really cool mural on that building as well, too. If you haven't had a chance to see that one yet, they've got a big Joe Padgett mural. You know, the same guy that did the Whales mural next to the now closed Starbucks at Campbell
Ironically,
and Grant.
Ironically, coffee. Yeah.
He did a really cool one, and this is at Speedway in Maine area on the south side of the street. So do go take a look over at Desert Drifter, locally owned coffee shop. They've got a drive-through. They just opened up this week. As well, tonight, La Rosa Live Music Venue. They're having a sneak peek happy hour starting this evening. This is the former Benedictine Monastery Country Club. They're opening up tonight, 5 p.m. There's a sneak peek happy hour. Drew Cooper is playing, so do go check that one out over there. Excited to see the conversion of the former Benedictine Monastery into a live music venue. It's going to have some character for sure. And so you can go get a sneak peek of that and go see Drew Cooper. That's 5 p.m. at La Rosa, and they're opening night tonight. As well, too, opening up this Friday, Ursa, 110 East Congress. Chef Aaron Lopez out of El Centro is opening up his local restaurant concept. This was most recently Blue Front, and that one has been completely rebranded and retooled, and it's going to open up just this Friday on the 10th of October, so we're excited about that one. And then Cal's Bake Shop is opening up as well, too. Cal's Bake Shop is located in the former Rocco's building on Broadway. And so they've set...
Oh, so you got a new place there. Okay.
Yes. And so they've got their opening date set for this Saturday, October 11th as well. So everybody's gearing up to get these restaurants open. We're trying to capture a part of season right now and make this happening. If you're not busy this upcoming weekend, you are in the absolute wrong business here in the Old Pueblo for sure. But when we look at restaurant openings, you know, I went through this whole parking brouhaha on Campbell and Grant. We had purchased the Chase Bank location over there in the intent to try to turn it into a restaurant. And we got absolutely kicked up and down by the city of Tucson for parking requirements. This was a huge parking lot. There were 56 spaces over there. And yet it was not allowed to be one singular standalone restaurant. And it died on the altar of parking. And as you mentioned at the beginning of the hour, the city of Tucson is looking at their Main Streets and Roads program over here, and they're talking about road diets, and they're talking about ways to improve public thoroughfare, walking, biking, transit. Well, part of the issue is our allegiance to these dated parking codes. We truly have to figure out a way to limit this aggressive, just swearing of faith that this exact parking code is the only way to make restaurants and bars work. Otherwise, you're going to end up with more drive-throughs, right? You're not going to end up with the kind of establishments that you really want to have, which are full-service sit-down restaurants, full-service sit-down coffee shops. If we just continue with this parking, we don't need to have football fields of parking in front of every restaurant. We don't need to have football fields of parking in front of downtown. We don't need to have football fields of parking on Broadway for all of the Sunshine Mile. But what we have to stop doing is allowing the neighborhoods to block parking on the streets of these establishments. This would solve large portions of our problem over there. Why do the residents of Sam Hughes own the street in front of their house? Why can they park there, but I cannot? What did they do differently to own that street? I think nothing, right? Just because you chronologically bought a house in front of that street doesn't mean you own the street. Do we all pay for those streets, Matt?
Mm-hmm.
I think we do. I
believe so.
Those streets actually belong to the public, not to the residences. And if the residences chose not to build a garage or to convert their garage into a house, well, then that's their own choice to make. But ultimately, that street parking should belong to everybody. And if you live one block off of a major street, you just know that parking might be taken up by some of the businesses as well too. And it would solve large problems of the not walkability that the city claims to want to fix by not having a football field of parking in between each building, which makes it not walkable, which creates the heat sink of blacktop, which ultimately makes it not a safe place to bike. It makes it not a safe place to walk. It makes things worse, and it prevents the very businesses we wish to have next to us here in the Old Pueblo. You want to have more full-service restaurants. You want to have more sit-down coffee shops. We've got to loosen up our parking codes if we want to make that happen. So I'm hoping they do something at MSNR tonight to do that, yeah, rather than just think about road diets over here. Because the road diets only work when you've got an arterial freeway system, right? It's easy to say, hey, we're going to make a road diet on certain roads in Phoenix because we want you to take the 101 loop or the 202 loop or now the 303 loop.
Sure.
Well, we don't even have a 001 loop over here. We have Broadway, Speedway, Grant, right? These are our thoroughfares. Yeah. These roads can't really take a road diet, nor can some of the arterials around them as well, too. When you think of Pima and you think of 6, like, quite frankly, you can't shrink those ones up. What's the population going to look like 10 years from now, 15 years from now, 20 years from now? There's only going to be more people, more cars. I hate to say it. It's going to happen. We actually need to make those roads wider, but we need to make less parking lots and let the free market decide if there's enough parking or not, not a municipal parking code.
And face it, a generation and a half ago, I believe 5th Street was considered enough of an arterial that it actually had a reversible lane on it at one time.
Yes.
It was considered an alternative. It was considered a major arterial, you know, and now it's like they want to go from 2 lanes to 1 in each direction. And so that's where we're at. And that's the mindset of the city. And you're right. If your goal is a walkable city, I think you put out some pretty good suggestions there to help them achieve that.
Well, again,
and people are taking rideshare to restaurants in ways that they never did before. So that's another area where your parking codes are probably out of date.
Without a doubt, there are solutions to the bus problem. There are solutions to the road problem over here. We just can't keep using the same old playbook over and over again and expect different results than what we're getting right now. So I appreciate that, Matt, for you helping me and all of our listeners solve these City of Tucson problems here in just the first quarter hour at the Morning Voice. But let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have Miss Lacey Nagao coming up. She's the National Get Out the Vote Director for Turning Point. We're going to have a fascinating conversation with Lacey coming up after the break. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger, and we are lucky enough to be joined live in the KVOI studios by Miss Lacey Nagao, the Get Out the Vote Director for Turning Point Action. Good morning, Lacey.
Good morning. Thank you, Grant. I'm excited to be here with you guys.
Hey, thanks for coming to spend part of your Wednesday morning with us over here. Why don't you, for our listeners, you give a little bit about your background over here first so that they get to know who Lacey Nagao is.
Yes, absolutely. So I'm the Chase the Vote Director for Turning Point Action. So I oversee our field program nationwide. And, you know, I didn't always think I wanted to work in politics. I often joke and I say, you know, I think my life would be a lot easier if I didn't work in politics, right? But 2020 happened and I saw what happened to my little kids. And I have three little kids. And we'd always been somewhat active in politics as far as volunteerism goes. But when you live in Tucson and you own a business, we naturally felt like we needed to be more quiet. And then 2020 happened. I saw schools shutting down. I saw my middle boy trying to do kindergarten from a screen. And I realized, you know, we can't be quiet anymore. And so I actually went to AmFest, which was my first Turning Point event. And it was there that I realized, wow, they make politics kind of cool again, right? Like, it made me want to be part of something. And so I knew our COO, Tyler Boyer, and I said, you know, yeah, if you ever look for someone in Tucson, let me know. And from there, it just kind of took off. And I started by just building as a rep down here in Tucson. And it really was passionate for me because I'm a mom. And I realized that there were so many other moms that they want to be involved and they want to do something. They just didn't know what to do. They needed someone to tell them, hey, these are the steps. This is X, Y, and Z. Oftentimes we say, become a PC. No one knows what a PC is. You know, no one knew what some of these things were. And so it started as a mom's coalition. We got young moms involved.
That's pretty amazing to get moms involved over here because this is both a powerful force, right? I mean, the head of a family over here. How do you find the time to be the national Get Out the Vote Director and still be the mother of three young children?
So it's crazy. Our life is a little bit of chaos. But I think if you have a passion and you have a purpose, you make time for what matters, right? And so for me, and I talk to young girls about this a lot, when I'm in mom mode, I really try and be in mom mode. I have that mom hat on. But when I'm in my work mode, they know, like, mom's doing this. And it's, I have to laugh because for a long time, I wonder, you know, am I leaving my kids too much? Am I doing the right thing? And the last few years, I've seen my daughter emulate everything I do, you know, run for student body president. She's pretending she's Charlie Kirk in her room. And it's like, wow, kids really do learn from what you're doing and not just maybe what you're talking about around the kitchen table.
Without a doubt. And I think COVID showed us just how active we need to be with our kids when we all got a peek at our school systems. Yeah. And suddenly you had to think that school isn't just a daycare to put your kids over here, but what are they teaching our children? And we got a peek under the hood. And I think a lot of moms and dads didn't like what they saw.
Yeah, I think we saw that across the board, that 2020, if you talk to any mom that's really involved now, 2020 was their wake-up moment. It was the moment that they're like, dang, I think I need to start saying something. I can't be quiet anymore. And that was essentially my story.
Without a doubt. Now, the Turning Point obviously has been, you know, all over the news, not just because of what happened in the last month, but really their involvement in a number of elections in such an important swing state like Arizona. Turning Point has been the forefront and probably more powerful than even the Republican Party itself in getting and registering voters in Arizona. Can you talk about some of those numbers?
Yeah, I love this question, Grant, because so I hate to lose. No one loves to lose, but I really hate to lose. And in 2022, I was here as a rep in Arizona, and I remember Carrie Lake, and I remember doing these events for Carrie. And we would have these amazing crowds. And then meanwhile, you saw Katie Hobbs, who was campaigning from her basement. She was not drawing any sort of a crowd. But there was something that we realized after that loss. While they were sitting there chasing votes, we were just doing these awesome rallies, but rallies don't win elections. And our ground game, I would argue the Republican ground game, is about 15 years behind where it needs to be. And if you look at Democrats, and Obama's actually a perfect model of this, in 2016, we kind of used to laugh about this, but it's so true. He was a master at community organizing. And so they would hire full-time people to come in and be a community organizer. The right had never done this before. And so when we started to look, okay, how do we build this out? There was no model on the right. So we looked at the left and we said, okay, how can we build out a Chase the Vote operation with Turning Point? And we had to be very strategic on where do we put these bodies and what states. So we've invested all in Arizona. When I say we threw the whole kitchen sink at Arizona in 2024, we did. So we had over 1,000 hired full-time ballot chasers. And, you know, that's a lot of money that had to be raised. It was a lot of just organizing people. But we knew that volunteers alone would not get this done against the machine that the Democrats have created.
Without a doubt. And Turning Point's done such a great job of making conservatism cool again, right? I always worried that the conservative side of things, the Republican Party, would just sit around and be like, well, we'll capture everybody when they're 30 years old and they start paying taxes, yep, right? Like, this is when we're going to get to.
That was my story, right?
Right?
It's like, dang.
But you're seeing like a youth movement now, like something I've almost never seen before, where young people have interest in conservative politics, maybe before they've got massive tax withholdings on their W-2.
Amen. I love that you mentioned this because Gen Z, especially men, are the most conservative that we've seen in decades. And we saw that in 2024 when we would go to college campuses. And I remember, Charlie, going to Penn State, and we took 5,000 MAGA hats, and within seconds, they were gone. And our producer said, you know, wait, there might be like truly a shift happening on college campuses. And then we started to notice that fraternities were reaching out to us like, hey, will you come and speak? Hey, will you come and bring some MAGA hats? And that was something that if you would have said 10 years ago, fraternities would be conservative, we would have been laughed upon.
Right. I mean, ultimately, having seen Charlie Kirk videos for the better portion of the last decade in my life, and that market penetration was really, really deep and moved into this short form content of Twitter, right? And of TikTok,
where, yeah. TikTok
where a 40-second video, you know, had so much impact over here. The first few years of Charlie Kirk appearing in campuses, it was a hostile crowd. Yep. They were showing up to protest him. And in the last couple of years, it almost flipped 180, and they seemed to be showing up to support. And there was far more supporters than there was hostility.
Amen. We saw that through and through across the board, especially within the last, I would say, 2 to 3 years. We joke, you know, not so jokingly now, but, you know, Charlie really converted a lot of these young men. And now I think we're slowly starting to see a shift in young women, but there is still a lot of work to do with our young women.
So what do you think we've got to do to get more young women interested in the conservative movement?
I think a lot of this comes down to education, as far as us being willing to speak out and educate them. Because if you think about it, these kids have typically, they've been going to a public school, then they go to a college campus. And I don't know about your college experience, but for me, I grew up in a conservative household. And I remember I went to college when I was 17 years old, and I was studying journalism and public relations. And within minutes, I realized, wow, my professors are really, really liberal. And they would tell me things to think. And as a 17-year-old whose brain was not fully developed yet, it was very easy for them to mold me. And for a moment, for a good year, I became a little liberal. And I laugh now because obviously, no, I'm so grateful. I changed, I paid taxes, all the things. Like, I realized, oh, I am conservative. But we have to start by being able to call it out for what it is. And we see so many things, especially on college campuses, that just quite frankly are not true.
No, and of course, you saw it just this week. It made the news that the University of Arizona, to continue to get all these federal funding and Pell Grants, may have to play a little nicer in the same sandbox with the federal government over here. And there's already a lot of blowback, like looking at the staff at the University of Arizona, like they don't seem to be too happy about these developments.
Amen. And I would say, you know, Democrats have one talking point. We hear it all the time. It's their abortion talking point for young women. And sadly, that's what they will forever be able to buckle down on. But girls are waking up. And that's honestly the really beautiful thing for me to watch, is you just have to show them all the other things. Like, why in the world would we want an open border when criminals are allowed in? Like, think of your children. And if you start to show them the bigger picture, that's when they're like, oh, dang, I never thought of it like that.
No, I think the abortion issue has been their one shining star, the North Star, used on nearly every ballot. There's some abortion always. Referendum, like to drive people out there to the votes, yeah. to codify it even more, and one step further and one step further, because it's seemingly the lightning rod that has been able to draw out the votes. And I think that single-handedly cost us in 2022.
I agree. And I would argue that, you know, Democrats have kind of taken that for granted. They assume that anyone, any female in their 20s or 30s automatically will vote with them. I thought myself when I would go and knock on doors, it was funny because I knew I was knocking on conservative doors, but oftentimes they'd be like, wait, are you a Democrat? I'm like, no, just because I'm a woman, it doesn't mean I'm a Democrat.
Absolutely not. Well, this is a fascinating conversation. More with Lacey Nagao, the Get Out the Vote director for Turning Point Action, coming up after the break. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Krueger on 1030 AM. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Krueger. And we're lucky enough to have another segment with Miss Lacey Nagao, the Get Out the Vote director for Turning Point Action. Welcome back, Lacey.
Thank you, Grant.
Hey, so you guys put together, I think, one of the most amazing events I've almost ever seen in just a little more than a week's time for Charlie Kirk's memorial. And you were a big part of that. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, thank you. It was honestly such an honor to be able to be just a small part of that. And we knew, so it would have been 4 weeks ago today when that devastating news came in. And I remember meeting with our events director Wednesday night, and she kind of said, you know, we're thinking about doing it here. And funny enough, President Trump found out about that, and he said, no, Charlie needs bigger. And he said, let's do it at Cardinals Stadium. So Cardinals Stadium is where we ended up doing it. And, you know, this was not a small task. This was 100,000 plus people between Cardinals Stadium and Desert Diamond. But I will say it was one of the most beautiful and healing things to be a part of, because through it, we were able to see, like, you know, Charlie, for us, I think sometimes when you're in it, you weren't able to see how impactful he was. And I remember walking over with Secret Service that morning, and I looked at my team and I said, you guys, look how many young people there are outside. Like, young kids were just loving Charlie. And that's when it kind of hit us, was, whoa, this was so much bigger than any of us ever realized, I think, in those moments, because we're in it every single day. But, you know, there's nothing more than Charlie would have wanted was to have this beautiful memorial to remember God and for us to get back to work. And that's what I tell my team.
Without a doubt, I'm seeing the impact of this, like, in my local church. I go to St. Peter and Paul's on Campbell over there, right? Small little Catholic yeah. church. And there are a lot of young people there. Like, in these last, like, 3 weeks, like, I've been really impressed to see a change in the demographics yeah. that we have in our local church. And I realize this is a sample size of one, right? And you can only draw so many conclusions from that. But to say that that didn't have an impact, that these kids probably weren't moved in some capacity by the words of Charlie Kirk to attend church again. Like, that's pretty amazing.
It is. I think I saw it's called the Charlie Kirk effect is what pastors are calling it. And, you know, that's one thing that Erica really has pushed every Sunday since she has tweeted, you know, go to church. And we've all just kind of followed suit is go to church. Even you don't have to be good at it, but just go to church. It'll make you a better person.
Without a doubt. And so I think it's yet another, you know, turning point, pun intended, in an American culture to see suddenly worship of God, like, as the forefront of our psyche, as opposed to just something on the back end, looking for penance when I'm old before yeah. I die. In the same way the Republican Party would get you when you started paying taxes, church would come around for you when you started recognizing
yeah,
your own mortality or something in your 50s or 60s or 70s. And I think we're starting to see a consciousness of this from the younger generation. And that to me is a really amazing effect of this.
It is. There's a true revival going on. And we've seen it in churches, like you said. I would say we've seen it even on high school campuses with the work that we do. I mean, prior to this, we had about 1,000 high school chapters, Turning Point chapters nationwide. As of just 2 days ago, we've had 130,000 inquiries to make college and high school chapters, which is incredible. I mean, it shows you the Charlie Kirk effect is real.
Without a doubt. Is there blowback from some of these school systems right now? Are they, like, trying to prevent these particular chapters from coming, giving their somewhat left of center politics from so many public schools?
You know, it's been interesting. public schools are usually pretty good because they've learned they need to abide by, you know, the rules a little bit. Private schools, and one specifically here in Tucson, it's been very fascinating to see who's accepting of Charlie Kirk and who has really doubled down on that.
Well, I see we're not going to mention that particular private school's name over here. I'll keep that one off the radio. But let's think about it as a well-known private religious high school.
And they reached out to me, and I couldn't believe it. I was going to send my daughter there, and now I'm second-guessing that.
Well, I think there's a real turn towards private education or perhaps even homeschooling, right? Yeah. 20 years ago, homeschooling was for like the survivalists or something out there in the wilderness of Idaho.
Right.
Like it was a little strange. But now like it really has me thinking like, should I have ever even sent my own kids to public schools, or should we have kept more of this in-house? I really question a lot.
I agree. I talk with my husband sometimes. I'm like, dang, our oldest daughter will be going into her freshman year next year. And part of me, after everything that I've seen, I want to homeschool her and I want to shelter her forever. But I also know, you know, we just have to raise our kids and hope that we teach them everything to stand on their own. And no matter where you go, and this is what I tell, you know, my kids, but also college students on campuses, there will always be that person that doesn't like you. There will always be that person that attacks you for your beliefs. But if we learned anything from Charlie, it's to stand strong in the face of all that adversity.
Without a doubt. And I think it really showed how having discussions, just like how we're having a discussion here and debating topics that sometimes can be very sensitive and, you know, get people very passionate. But having those discussions is incredibly important for our community, because the moment we stop talking, right, the moment we say words are violence, then we're justifying using violence to stop those words. And I think we've made a terrible turn in society when we allow that.
No, absolutely. That's probably the number one thing we could probably learn from this whole horrific experience is we can't stop talking. This should have never happened, but it did. So what do we learn from it? Well, we just talked about people are turning to God, but we also have to remember, like, dialogue is everything. We have to be able to have open conversations.
No, and it's so neat to see both the format be successful for you guys and to have just witnessed the master debater that Charlie was. And probably his most effective technique, besides for being incredibly smart, was putting down his microphone.
Yeah.
And allowing the other side to go double barrel, full shotgun blast, give me everything. Break out your phone and your tablet and give me all the facts from Wikipedia over here and tell me how smart you are. And I'm going to go after this with just the knowledge I have in my brain and maybe some common sense and a little wisdom from God over here, and to see how successful of a tactic that was.
Yes. And that's the thing is, Charlie was the same person that you saw behind that, you know, behind that screen as he was in person. He was genuine. He cared about people. And he really just was adamant that he had a mission, and it was to stand for truth.
Without a doubt. Now, Turning Point may be, quite frankly, more powerful right now than some of your traditional parties, looking at the impact they had. I mean, this event was attended by the who's who of Republican politics, not just in the state of Arizona, where Turning Point is based, but nationally.
Yeah, most of the president's cabinet, it's just amazing. Most of the administration was there. Leaders in Congress, it was just incredible.
Yeah, and so where does Turning Point go from here? Like, how can you leverage the interest in both the organization and conservative politics to translate into future success in both politics and for American families?
Yes, thank you for this question. So Turning Point USA is our C3. It started with college students in mind. And we learned, you know, eventually these college kids graduate. And we also need a place for these parents, right? We need a place for people that want to get involved. Kind of like I said, these moms who want to do something, or these dads. And that's where Turning Point Action comes in. And that's our C4. So Turning Point Action is the arm that I work under, where we do all things political. We endorse candidates. We can fundraise for candidates. I argue we do the fun stuff and the not so fun stuff. But with that, we learned. So in 2024, with our Chase the Vote program, I'll take this back for a moment. If you look at Arizona, we have more registered Republicans here than Democrats. So it became a numbers game. And so in 2024, it was like, dang, okay, how are we going to win Arizona? Because we have to win Arizona to get the White House. And it was, well, if we have the numbers, we just have to make sure they get out. So we call them disengaged voters. So these are people that normally would not vote if it wasn't Lacey or Grant having that relationship with them. So I promise you have people, if you're listening, you have people in your inner circle that are not voting. And if we can start with our inner circle, getting them to turn out and vote, that can drastically change where elections move in the future.
Without a doubt, and Turning Point Action has certainly not been shy in endorsing candidates right from the start and early as well, too. And with some degree of success, and in some cases, you know, there's been a lack of success, too, because in the state of Arizona, we've got this conservative legislator, right? There's an advantage in the Senate. There's an advantage in the House. And Donald Trump won, of course, the popular vote in the state of Arizona, but yet we lost the gubernatorial race. Mm-hmm. We've lost both Senate seats. We've lost Secretary of State, right? Like, and an attorney general as well, too. So it's a really interesting dichotomy, the state of Arizona as well, too, where
it is. You're up against a little bit of the McCain machine, and then you have so many people who move here and are registered as independents. And, you know, one thing that I will say is in 2024, I remember sitting down with my boss, who's our COO, and he said, you know, we have a universe of 385,000 people. I'm confident that if we can get half of them to vote, we can win this thing for Trump. And I said, okay, that's a lot, but I think we can do it. Well, then a few months went by, and then it kind of went up, and he said, okay, Lacey, I think we should shoot for 75%, like 75%. Well, needless to say, our team, they crushed it, but we got 86% of that 385,000 universe to show up. So 315,000 people that would not have voted if they wouldn't have built that relationship with one of our ballot chasers, really a neighbor. We hire people that live in their neighborhoods to go and talk to their neighbors about voting. And that's where the Democrats have been really killing us in every other state. And we realized we have to learn to play their game, but play it a little bit better.
Well, let's take a quick break over here, hear from some great local sponsors. We've got one more segment with Lacey Nagao, the Get Out the Vote director from Turning Point Action. We're going to talk maybe a little Arizona gubernatorial race when we come back over here. I understand Turning Point's got a favorite in that race. Let's discuss that. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Krueger and Lacey Nagao on 1030 AM The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Krueger, and we've got one more segment with Miss Lacey Nagao. She's the national director of Get Out the Vote for Turning Point Action. Welcome back, Lacey.
Thank you, Grant.
Hey, before the break, we were alluding to this gubernatorial race that'll be popping up here in just over one calendar year, and Turning Point's already got an endorsement in that one. You want to talk about that?
Absolutely. We sure do. And I would say this is where we're going all in for 2026. Andy Biggs, he is our guy. One thing I personally love about Andy is he's one of the very few politicians who will stand up against anyone and not back down for what he believes in. I've seen this with Andy not only in Arizona, but when he goes to D.C. So he was obviously someone that we knew before this, but also someone that, I mean, we knew from the very get-go when he put his hat in the ring, it was a no-brainer. Like, he is our guy. We need Arizona to become the Florida of the West. And I do believe with Andy in, it can become the most freest state, the most prosperous state. And heaven knows, after this mess that we've encountered with Katie Hobbs, it's what we need.
So that Republican field looks to be even more crowded, with last week Congressman David Swikert putting his name into the ring as well, too. So we've got Karen Taylor Robeson, Swikert, and Biggs right now. And I worry that the Republicans are going to tear each other to pieces and spend all their money on the primary and then get to the general, bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's a valid concern. And honestly, Grant, it's a very sad reality that this isn't the first time we've seen it. And why in the world did he feel the need to put in? You know, there's a few different theories, and I won't get into them too much. But I think at the end of the day, it is. It's a complete waste of money. It's a complete waste of time, of resources. And if there was any time to come together, this would be that time.
Well, Turning Point Action is a pretty data-driven organization over here. Do you have any polling right now to suggest Biggs is in the lead substantially? I'd heard of some early polling, but is there anything recent you could share with us?
Yeah, so actually just last week, we have Andy substantially ahead of KTR, and this was before David got in the race. And, you know, it's just, like you said, I think the most unfortunate part of this is we could just say, okay, Andy's our guy, and think of all this money and all this time and resources and energy we could save to actually defeat the Democrat. But instead, we're going to be fighting our own people. And that's one thing, you know, if we could ever change, it's that. It's helping Republicans realize when it's time to bow out and get behind the next person.
Easier said than done, for sure, particularly for those who are well financially endowed and willing to fund their own campaign in some capacity. Kind of hard to stop.
Absolutely. When you have never-ending amounts of money, you can kind of stay in for as long as you want. And, you know, that is not putting America first. That's not putting Arizona first. And I think it's time that really us as Republicans start to say that out loud, because it's not doing what's best for the people. And you have to wonder, is this a selfish decision right now? Or is this something that, you know, we truly believe is the best for Arizonans?
Well, regardless of the outcome of that particular primary, it would be safe to say that because of your efforts at Turning Point Action, the Republican voter registration has increased. And in 2026, the Republican candidate should be most likely the favorite no matter who comes out, correct?
Correct. And this is something that I do want to touch on. You know, Charlie was so passionate about voter registration. And our one, when I talked with our COO, I said, you know, what's the one thing you really want from this memorial? And he said, I want tons of voter registration forms. So we had 50,000 voter registration forms at this memorial. And we put them on seats. We handed them out, you know, from 5 a.m. until 5 p.m. And that's what was so cool to see, is there are people, you guys, that are not registered to vote. There's people that show up to Trump rallies that aren't registered to vote, that show up to Charlie's memorial that aren't registered to vote. So all of us, if there's one call to action, it's go out and make sure your neighbors and your inner circle are actually registered to vote at their current address.
It's amazing how important that can be, something that so many people forget about, that civic involvement can help make the difference. That we had races such as the gubernatorial race that were this close, you know, 10, 11,000 votes. Think about in the attorney general race. How close was
280.
Abe? Yeah, exactly, right?
Wild.
The difference that one or two neighbors that we could all reach out to could make in these races. So I just want to say thank you for your efforts in Turning Point Action and getting the youth out to vote. And I want to say thank you for spending part of your Wednesday morning with us over here on The Morning Voice as well, too.
Absolutely. Thank you, Grant. I appreciate you having me.
As Miss Lacey Nagao, director of Get Out the Vote for Turning Point Action. What a great show we had this week over here with Rayshon Kaiser, the head coach of the Tucson Sugar Skulls, and Miss Lacey Nagao from Turning Point Action. Looking forward to another show next week, next Wednesday with you. I always appreciate you spending part of your day with us here on The Morning Voice. Enjoy Parents Weekend. Get out there early for those local restaurants. Everything's about to be packed in the Old Pueblo, and I couldn't be happier. Thanks for listening and have a great day. Kathleen Wynn coming up next.